start with the meditation. Please sit straight. Both feet firmly on the ground. Your back well supported. Don't fold your arms. Sit, relax. Take a deep breath. Gently bring your attention to your breathing. Gently breathe in and gently breathe out. Even if your mind goes elsewhere, acknowledge the thought, ignore it, and bring your attention back to your breathing. Consciously slow down your breathing. So when we were preparing for this retreat, we were having a conversation about what topics do we want to discuss. So one of the overwhelming topics or the support came for sleep. So it looks like it is one of the things that we do almost every day, but we also don't know how to do it or how to enjoy. So let's start with a simple question. In one word, I want you to summarize your experience of a good night's sleep. When you slept well, it can even be last night, hopefully, and then when you wake up after a good night's sleep, what's your feeling? What's your experience? Fresh. Relaxed, recharged, feel light, no dreams, energetic, rejuvenated, very good, satisfied, nice word, peaceful, very nice, very nice. Sorry? Tranquility, okay, peaceful, yes. Healthy, you feel healthy. Sorry? Sleep more. Oh, when you wake up after a good night's sleep, you want to sleep more. That means it's pretty clear you haven't slept well.
Newborn.
A newborn, okay. Very nice. So, as you, all of us have experienced, if not on a daily basis, hopefully more frequently, how it feels to have a good night's sleep. So what we are going to discuss about today is, why is sleep essential? What is the structure of sleep? When we sleep, what happens inside our brain and body? It's very important that we understand it if we want to have a good night's sleep. And what are the effects of sleep deprivation? What happens if we sleep less than it is required? And what does that required amount mean? What does that less mean? Is also we will discuss. And then of course, what are some tips that we can use for better sleep? That's what we will discuss in the next few minutes. Okay? Good. So, I just want you to have a look at this questionnaire and I'll give you a couple of minutes. Read the questions and then rate it for yourself. Okay? And be honest, I'm not going to ask you for your rating. It's just for your own self. Can you read that or you want me to read it out? So the first one is satisfaction. Are you satisfied with your sleep? Rarely I am satisfied, sometimes I am satisfied, or usually or always I am satisfied. Depending on that, you give a 0 or a 1 or a 2. Alertness. Do you stay awake all the day without dozing? Same scoring. Timing. Are you asleep or trying to sleep between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m.? Efficiency. Do you spend less than 30 minutes awake at night? This includes the time it takes to fall asleep. Okay, that's about efficiency. That means how soon you fall asleep. When you sleep at night, how soon you fall asleep. Duration. Do you sleep between 6 to 8 hours per day? So now you can rate yourself. Score for each one of them. And then add them up. It's a very simple, proven questionnaire for us to subjectively assess our sleep quality. You're done? This is for yourself. Anything less than 4 is not good. Anything closer to 10 is good. In terms of your score, if you add up all these, and the max you get is 10, 2 each. And as I said, you don't have to share with anyone. It's purely for your own subjective experience for you to assess your quality of sleep. We'll move on? We'll move on? Go ahead? Okay. So, why we need sleep? Relaxation of muscles. Okay. Detoxification of body. Very good.
To heal our body and mind.
To heal our body and mind. Fantastic. For better digestion. Excellent. To minimize thoughts. Okay.
Regenerating.
Good dreams. Okay. Very nice. For the mind to forget the things, usually negative things that have happened in the past or the previous day. Very good. So, let's see.
To refresh ourselves.
Somebody said something?
refresh ourselves.
To refresh ourselves, very good.
Seven days to see how he'd cope without sleep. On the second day, his eyes stopped focusing. Next, he lost the ability to identify objects by touch. By day three, Garner was moody and uncoordinated. At the end of the experiment, he was struggling to concentrate, had trouble with short-term memory, became paranoid, and started hallucinating. Although Garner recovered without long-term psychological or physical damage, for others, losing shut-eye can result in hormonal imbalance, illness, and in extreme cases, death. We're only beginning to understand why we sleep to begin with, but we do know it's essential. Adults need 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night, and adolescents need about 10. We grow sleepy due to signals from our body telling our brain we are tired, and signals from the environment telling us it's dark outside. The rise in sleep-inducing chemicals like adenosine and melatonin send us into a light doze that grows deeper, making our breathing and heart rate slow down and our muscles relax. This non-REM sleep is when DNA is repaired and our bodies replenish themselves for the day ahead. In the United States, it's estimated that 30% of adults and 66% of adolescents are regularly sleep deprived. This isn't just a minor inconvenience. Staying awake can cause serious bodily harm. When we lose sleep, learning, memory, mood, and reaction time are affected. Sleeplessness may also cause inflammation, hallucinations, high blood pressure, and it's even been linked to diabetes and obesity. In 2014, a devoted soccer fan died after staying awake for 48 hours to watch the World Cup. While his untimely death was due to a stroke, studies show that chronically sleeping fewer than 6 hours a night increases stroke risk by 4.5 times compared to those getting a consistent 7 to 8 hours of shut-eye. For a handful of people on the planet who carry a rare inherited genetic mutation, sleeplessness is a daily reality. This condition, known as fatal familial insomnia, places the body in a nightmarish state of wakefulness, forbidding it from entering the sanctuary of sleep. Within months or years, this progressively worsening condition leads to dementia and death. How can sleep deprivation cause such immense suffering? Scientists think the answer lies with the accumulation of waste products in the brain. During our waking hours, our cells are busy using up our day's energy sources, which get broken down into various byproducts, including adenosine. As adenosine builds up, it increases the urge to sleep, also known as sleep pressure. In fact, caffeine works by blocking adenosine's receptor pathways. Other waste products also build up in the brain, and if they're not cleared away, they collectively overload the brain and are thought to lead to the many negative symptoms of sleep deprivation. So, what's happening in our brain when we sleep to prevent this? Scientists found something called the glymphatic system, a cleanup mechanism that removes this buildup and is much more active when we're asleep. It works by using cerebrospinal fluid to flush away toxic byproducts that accumulate between cells. Lymphatic vessels, which serve as pathways for immune cells, have recently been discovered in the brain, and they may also play a role in clearing out the brain's daily waste products. While scientists continue exploring the restorative mechanisms behind sleep, we can be sure that slipping into slumber is a necessity if we want to maintain our health and our sanity.
So you saw that. Why there is a need for us to sleep? Because increasingly, especially in the IT industry that we are in, we seem to be sleep deprived. Having irregular sleep timings, not knowing what proper sleep hygiene is, always having this pressure to perform, to excel, to earn, not necessarily learn, but earn. Okay? That's putting a lot of impact on the health of IT professionals in general. Now, the problems are so worse that people in their 30s are being diagnosed with high blood pressure, with heart attack problems, with diabetes, and good portion of them come from the IT industry. And as we will see today, one of the important reasons in the changed lifestyle is insufficient sleep. Because we all, most of us, seem to think that sleep is some kind of a necessary evil. Wish we could get away with 2 or 3 hours sleep and then work more so that we can even move ahead faster. But today we will learn that why that is a completely misplaced thinking, and why at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep is essential for each one of us. So let me summarize what you saw in the video. Sleep enriches our ability to learn, memorize, and make logical decisions and choices. It's proven that if you are sleep deprived, if you sleep for less than 6 hours and you try to learn something the next day, your ability to retain that information goes down drastically. And after reading something, if you don't get a good night's sleep, whatever you have read does not get consolidated. Sleep recalibrates our emotional brain circuits, thus benevolently servicing our psychological health. It plays an extremely important role of a psychological shock absorber, so that it reduces the impact of emotionally disturbing situations that have happened the day before. Sleep through dreams melts past and present knowledge, inspiring creativity. We must have heard stories about how famous scientists got their most creative ideas as a part of their sleep when they dreamt. And the classic case is by the chemist Kekule, who discovered the carbon ring of C6H6. You know, how are they organized? He just couldn't figure out. But then one fine night when he was sleeping during his dreams, he saw a snake who had its tail in its mouth, and then he could see that circle, and then suddenly it hit him that yes, carbon and hydrogen can be organized in the form of the hexagon, and that's how you get the C6H6, and one of the biggest puzzles in chemistry was solved. So sleep through dreams melts past and present knowledge, inspiring creativity. And sleep restocks the armory of immune system, very important, helping fight malignancy, preventing infection, and warding off all forms of weakness and sickness. If you sleep less than 6 hours and that is what your habit is, your immune system goes down to such an extent that you start becoming susceptible to all sorts of infections. Any small change in the environment will start impacting your health if you get insufficient sleep, because sleep has been found to replenish our immune system. Lack of sleep reduces the T cells, or the natural fighting cells that fight against the infections inside our body, because that is the natural immune system that is built inside us. Lack of sleep impacts that. Sleep reforms body's metabolic state by fine-tuning the balance of insulin and circulating glucose. If you disturb your sleep or get insufficient sleep, this imbalance can progressively lead to glucose intolerance and then to diabetes. Adequate sleep is intimately tied to fitness of our cardiovascular system, because if you don't sleep properly, it increases blood pressure, and we all know increased blood pressure is one of the primary reasons for all sorts of heart-related problems. Sleep impacts every single part of our body. It impacts our cardiovascular, metabolic, immune, and reproductive systems. There is not a single organ, there is not a single system inside the body that is not impacted by sleep. And what happens when we sleep? What is that? What is the structure? That's what you see here. This piece that you see here is the time that we take for us to fall asleep, which is usually between 20 to 30 minutes. And then the sleep goes on in the cycles of about 5 to 6 cycles, each cycle lasting from 90 to 110 to 120 minutes, anywhere between that, on an average about 90 minutes. And in the first cycle of 90 minutes, within, you see here, within 1 hour, we get into what we call as deep sleep. It's called as NREM, non-rapid eye movement. And it starts from here. We are awake and then we move into REM state in the second cycle, REM, rapid eye movement. NREM is non-rapid eye movement and they are called as NREM 1, NREM 2, NREM 3 and NREM 4. What happens progressively in each stage is when you are awake, your brain produces alpha waves. That is when you are awake and relaxed in the current state. So just before you are sleeping, brain starts generating alpha waves. And then you have the light sleep, which lasts for about few minutes. And that is comprised by shallow brain waves. And then you get into little deeper sleep after 10 or 15 minutes. And that is where we call it as NREM 2 and NREM 3. Both of them sometimes are called as stage 3 sleep. And then we have deep waves interspersed with faster waves. And in the final stage, which lasts for about 45 to 60 minutes, we have these slow, deep delta brain waves. And this is the state that is very important, that even repairs our broken DNA, that completely relaxes us, that charges up our immune system and gets us that feeling of relaxation. And that refreshment comes from this sleep of what we call as deep stage 4 or NREM 4 sleep. And in the light sleep stage, which is stage 1, muscle, brain and eye activity, they decrease. And in the stage 2, eye movement and muscle activity stop. As you move through NREM 1 and NREM 2, your muscle movement and eye movement, they stop, the muscle activity. And brain waves start slowing down. In stage 3 or NREM 4, the last stage, brain produces very slow delta waves. Sleeper may be disoriented if awakened. When you are in that deep NREM 4 state, when you are awakened, you feel disoriented. You feel your head is spinning and that is the state where it is very difficult to awake the person. And from the second cycle onwards, as you saw here, REM state enters. We do not have any REM sleep in the first 1.5 hour, 90 to 100 minutes. Then this REM state starts and progressively this REM component increases and then the deep sleep reduces. Okay? And during the REM state, heart, breathing and blood pressure, they gently rise. Body is paralyzed, eye movement is quick, and that is what we call as the dream state. So you can't move the body, but brain shows you or you start seeing all sorts of panoramic dreams. So that happens in this REM state. And each stage is very important for us to be able to utilize or get the best benefit out of our sleep. And each cycle lasts for about 90 to 100 minutes and that's what we get about 5 to 6 cycles based on how many hours we sleep. And if you keep waking up, if you keep disturbing your sleep, then you start getting into all sorts of problems. Sometimes when you wake up, you can fall back asleep very easily. Sometimes when you wake up, you won't be able to fall back asleep faster. It depends on which stage you are trying to stay awake. It's helpful to to set the alarm. You can check your sleep timings to set the alarm such that from the time you sleep, you do the multiples of 90 to 95 minutes and then set your alarm. Because when you are able to wake up in this stage 2, progressively in this part, if you are able to wake up during this stage, then you will feel refreshed. If you set your alarm such that you wake up at some other stage, then you won't feel that freshness. So that's where this timing helps. If it can be multiples of 90 to 95 minutes and that is when you wake up, on an average few minutes here and there, you can check yourself. That's what helps you to actually wake up in a very refreshed manner. And this is the sleep latency we call. If you fall asleep in less than 5 minutes, okay, it shows that you are a little sleep deprived on an average. But if you take that 10 to 15 minutes or 20 minutes time where you progressively fall asleep, that's the healthy way. That means it shows that you have been getting every single day or the past few days good amount of sleep. And once that is there, these rest of the stages begin. And as you see, the REM state increases progressively as the night progresses. That is why most of the dreams that we get is just before we wake up. Because the dream state is this REM state. And when you are really asleep in the beginning, that is where you experience this N3 or stage 4 sleep, which progressively reduces as the night progresses. But that's one component which actually helps us in rejuvenating, in repairing the body's tissues, body's DNA, and helps us improve our immune system. So sleep is not something that is passive as we think. Brain and body are very active and a lot of repair work is going on when we fall asleep. It's just that we are not awake, we are not conscious. But a lot of activity, metabolic activity, and a lot of other things are happening as we sleep. Any questions so far? It depends. So far, no ill effects have been found other than your boss or your mom complaining that you tend to oversleep. If on an average, I will show you that. As you age, is there any change? Is that the question? I will answer all those questions at the end as a part of Q&A if you don't mind. So let me cover the things, okay? And then I will come back to the questions. In whatever I've covered so far, is that okay? Is that clear? Okay. So there's, inside our body, we also have a biological clock. Okay, it's called as SCN or suprachiasmatic nucleus. Don't worry if you don't remember the tongue twisters. Just know that we also have a biological clock that sends the signal as night starts falling in. It sends the signals to different parts of the body saying night is approaching, now is the time for sleep. And then accordingly, the activity of different organs starts changing, or the different organ system starts changing. What is that? We will, as we move forward, we will see that. So there are two cycles that go on parallelly or simultaneously inside each one of us. One is what we call as the circadian rhythm or process C, as the scientists call it. That pretty much goes on in the cycles of 24 hours, 24.18 minutes or 24 hours approximately, you can say. So as you wake up, as the night approaches, this is what we call as the wake drive. From 7 a.m. onwards, you start accumulating that sleep drive. So the sleep drive keeps increasing. And when the circadian rhythm, it reaches around 11 p.m., night time, that is for normal daytime workers. For shift workers, we will discuss in a minute. For us normal daytime workers, that's need urge to sleep increases around this time. When the distance between the circadian drive or the circadian rhythm and the sleep drive is highest, that is when we feel it as the greatest urge to sleep, when the distance is highest. And when once you sleep, this urge to sleep starts coming down and this wake drive, it increases. And early in the morning, around 7 a.m., you are fully awake. Okay, between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. or between 6 a.m. and 8 a.m., you start becoming awake. So when this distance is highest, that is where we have the greatest urge to sleep. And what does this sleep do? As you saw in the short video clip, as soon as we are awake, adenosine, that is the chemical that gets generated by the brain, that starts accumulating inside the brain. As the amount of adenosine increases inside the brain, so does our urge to sleep. And in the sleep, we will watch another clip which helps us clean all these byproducts, mainly adenosine, and that reduces the urge to sleep. And then, as soon as you are awake, your sleep drive starts going up again. And in those 16 hours that you are awake, that sleep drive reaches the maximum and again you start feeling sleepy. Okay? And this is the homeostatic sleep drive that I was talking about, which we call as process F. And then this is the circadian wave drive. Here if you see, it is small f in the morning. So when the circadian wave is at its peak and then the homeostatic sleep drive is at its peak, that is when we start feeling this urge to sleep, and here we have this sleep period. So you can say that is when the body wants to sleep. And when you move from different time zones, either you travel to the east or you travel to the west, it is this circadian rhythm that is still wanting you to sleep, but the external environment is not conducive. That's why when you come back from US, or those people who go to US or to Europe, you see that difference. You struggle to sleep or you struggle to adjust because these two drives get misaligned. Your circadian rhythm keeps going on 24 hours irrespective of whichever time zone you are in. It follows the regular time zone that you are in. But this sleep drive, that keeps changing. So when there is misalignment between these two, you start experiencing that as jet lag. Okay? And the recommended sleep ranges for various ages, are you able to see this? For newborns, it's about 14 to 17 hours. For infants, less than a year, it's 12 to 15 hours. For toddlers, 11 to 14. For preschoolers, it's 10 to 13. School-age children and teenagers, it's anywhere between, you see that, 9 to 11 or 10 to 13. That's why, because this is the amount of required sleep, and for teenagers and for preschoolers, they need anywhere above 9 hours. That is where whenever you ask them to wake up in the morning, almost all the kids wake up groggy. They just don't want to get out of the bed. Bus is going to come, uto bete, you have to get ready, it starts with that. And as the time approaches, uttevyanai, it reaches that. And that's how our school systems are done, unfortunately, because they deprive the teenagers and preschoolers from the required amount of sleep. And those schools that have moved their start times to later part of the day, even a little later by just 30 minutes, instead of 8 or 8.30, they start at 9, 9.15 or 9.30, they saw a drastic difference in the performance of the students, all other things becoming being equal. And for young adults between 16 to 25 and from 26 to 64 age, where almost all of us fall into this bracket, we need anywhere between 6 to 9 hours. For older adults, it's not 4 hours, 5 hours. They may have difficulty sleeping, but that does not mean that they require less sleep. You see the difference? They also require between 7 to 8 hours. And these are the recommended ranges, and these are, with a very big S, may be appropriate. Okay? And this is from the National Sleep Foundation, one of the best websites. If you want to get any tips on sleep, you can get them from National Sleep Foundation. And if you see here, we need the 7 to 9 hours of sleep every day. And this is the recommended range. And beyond this 10 hours, it becomes a little too much. Basically, sleep does not add any more value. It's not that it is bad, it is just that it does not add any more value if you oversleep. This should be good enough. This is for a normal adult. And those of you who sleep less than 6 hours, what happens? We will see the impact of that sleep deprivation. And the interesting part about sleep deprivation is we people are not so good at agreeing or gauging that I am sleep deprived. We feel that I'm absolutely fine. No, yes, I can do it. But many of our faculties, especially our mental and physical faculties, they operate at suboptimal level. But our ego stops us from agreeing. See the difference when you have had a good night's sleep and then you go to office, and then you have to force yourself out of the bed and you go to office. What is your performance? What is your level of involvement in meetings? And how sharp you can think? Yeah. Even if somebody feels sleepy, even after the recommended range of 7 to 8 hours of sleep, then you have to speak with the doctor. That's a very, very small percentage. That's why it's written as may be appropriate. If that is sustainable, then maybe you are less than 5% of those lucky ones who can get away with 6 hours of sleep. But even for those less than 6 hours, we will see the impact. Yes.
What can we do about that?
Yeah, as parents, we have to make a decision. We have to speak with the school system and help them understand that why they should start later, and then we should allow kids to sleep longer. And this is the problem all over the world. We are parents, so we are responsible, we know this, so we should start thinking about it something. And what's the answer? I don't know. I've seen kids who are rushed, they are still sleeping, their mom bathes them, puts them the clothes, feeds something, gives the box, and they get into the bus.
So Bala, what I feel, or maybe you know, because I've been also being you know going through all the website and the detail which is already there. I think toddlers or the children, they want more sleep because it is more from the side of they are in a growing stage, physically, mentally, so they require more sleep, right? Gradually, as you go older, like a young age, you require like 5 to 8 hours sleep, or maybe range from 8 to 7, 7 to 8. So everyone is, you know, every website has their own parameters, and it is all modern researchers which do all this thing. It is all depend on mean median mode and different way of working, a different style. I think going forward in the digital age, I think that may be cut down more as we grow gradually. So, but as in the older age, like my parents are also, because it is not a time of, you know, any growth from mental side. Mental, maybe mental will be, but not from the side of the physical. So that time it is not repairing. So I think that time, okay. I think this is less time, which is what...
I respectfully disagree.
Yeah.
So as I said, there is a difference
It's a viewpoint, I think, that's where it is there, and
absolutely.
People are, it is all the body.
We will deal with that. I'll share some content, especially in the old people with the Alzheimer's research. I'll share that stuff. Okay.
One more thing, if you just want to do it. So, if in what modern, the science or the medicines is saying that, you should have 80 to 120, that's what the BP is, should be. But it is all mean median, that's what. It is all the body which is there. I think there, I see a lot of people which is in the older age also, which is having a much higher, but they are very healthy. So that's what I just wanted to.
So here, thanks for bringing up that point. What I am sharing with you is, in general, make you aware. Most of this might be applicable to most of you people. A simple way to check what amount of sleep you individually need is track your sleep for about 2 weeks. Okay? After the sleep, if you wake up fresh, you don't doze off during the day, you are energetic, you feel good about it, other than the post-lunch period, we will discuss that, which lasts for a few minutes, siesta kind of time. Rest of the day, you are active, okay, and you feel fresh. That's very important, because we can fake how active we are. We are very poor in judging the sleep deprivation. That's another unfortunate stuff with us humans. If you are able to do with that, and then when you start sleeping, it's not that as soon as you put your head to your bed, you are asleep, you are gone. That means it shows you are not getting enough sleep on an average. If you have this, and then you can time and have a sleep journal, that will be your time. But on an average, after testing enough number of people across the world, these are the recommended ranges. And that's why it is said, this is maybe appropriate. Anything less than this, we will see the impact. Okay? See, there are two times. Thanks for asking. There are two groups of people, broadly we can divide. One of them we call as owls and one of them we call as larks. Larks is basically early to bed, early to rise types. Okay? They fall asleep between maybe 9 and 11 and then wake up. Add another 8 hours, they wake up between 6 and 8 or 6 and 7, whatever that 8 hour range is. Owls, they're, because of the way their circadian rhythm and then their process S, they interact, they fall asleep later. And then they would like to wake up later. And in the modern world, unfortunately, all the systems are skewed towards larks. That is, those people who go to bed early and then wake up early. Okay? So, based on that, we are only talking about the duration. That's why. That's why we are not saying what is the recommended time.
So, there is no recommendation.
The recommendation is, it's not that you're every day you're going to sleep from 9 a.m. to whatever, if you add 5 p.m. The recommended time is day is for work, night is for sleep. As simple as that. That's what our human bodies are made up for.
A small question I just want to add on to this, the cycle that you have shown. If we can superimpose the generation of the melatonin onto this, that will give the most of the answer that people ask for this kind of answers, I think.
Yes.
Maybe that will be helpful, please.
In the next version, I'll try to do that. Good question. We will deal that in the Q&A. Okay? So, in terms of what happens if you get less sleep than required, I won't take the numbers. Okay? So I don't want to get into arguments, so I will say less sleep than required, assuming that each one of us understands how much we require. So there are more than 20 large-scale epidemiological studies that have tracked millions of people over many decades, all of which report the same clear relationship. The shorter you sleep, the shorter is your life. All this research, whatever you want, I can provide. So I'm not going to go into details of listing tens of references. Okay? Those who sleep 6 or less hours daily have 45% more risk of developing heart attack. Adults 45 years or older who sleep fewer than 6 hours a night are 200% more likely to have a heart attack or stroke during their lifetime compared with those sleeping 7 to 8 hours a night. You may agree, you may disagree. My intention is not to force you to agree to this. My intention is to make you aware, present the current understanding of the sleep, and then help you check yourself how you can become more effective, more efficient, and more refreshed. Okay? Good. And the reason for this is calcification of coronary arteries. When we get insufficient sleep, body does not get enough time to do its cleanup work. Okay? You are not giving enough time for the sanitation to happen inside. For the sanitation workers that we have inside in every organ system, we are not giving them enough time. Even here, when we do one conference and then we have to give at least 3 to 4 days time so that all the rooms are ready. If they are not ready, the next group that is coming in would not feel good about it. The same thing happens even inside the body. Diabetes and obesity. Less than 6 hours routinely have higher risk of developing diabetes because sleep deprivation increases insulin resistance. It's as if when you don't sleep, the way it happens in a very simple manner is we have a cell. When we eat something, whatever we eat gets transformed or converted into glucose. Clear? And this glucose needs to enter each cell of our body. Okay? And we have about 50 trillion cells here. Each cell needs to get that glucose inside. And the lock, the key that opens this lock of the cell is insulin. Okay? When the insulin key is inserted into the lock of the cell and it opens, this glucose molecule gets inside the cell. That's when the organs and the tissues get the necessary energy. When you are sleep deprived, it's been observed, this key refuses to turn and the lock refuses to open. When that refuses to open, the glucose content inside the blood increases. Okay, that's what we call as insulin resistance, because the insulin refuses to open the cell so that the glucose can enter inside it. And how do we get into this, how this diabetes and obesity, there are two hormones which are released by the body, leptin and ghrelin. Leptin signals fullness. That's what when you eat something full, you get that this is enough, the satiety signal. And that is done through this leptin. And when you feel hungry, which will start, or hopefully it hasn't started in another half an hour's time, the ghrelin signals that you are feeling hungry. But sleep deprivation has been found to throw these two hormones work haywire. You start feeling less full and you start feeling more hungry in spite of having food. That's the interesting part. That's where you start accumulating calories. Chronic sleep deprivation decreases the activity of leptin and increases the activity of ghrelin. So it's a double whammy. You will eat, but your body and brain do not get that signal that you have had it enough. It will crave famine in the midst of plenty. You are still feeding, but your brain is still crying famine. Aur chahiye. Okay? And dieting without proper sleep burns muscle mass, not fat. If you are dieting and you are not getting enough sleep, what gets burnt as a part of dieting is your muscle mass, not fat. Okay? Immune system. Sleep restores immune system activity and helps fight infections. Immune system activates sleep system when we fall sick. All of us must have observed. I heard a couple of you were sick and then you were taking rest because you had fever as soon as you came in because of the weather change. That's why as soon as we get fever, one of the first things we would want to do is to take rest. Because that's body's way to not to waste energy in any other way but focus on fighting the infection. Sleep loss reduces immunity and makes the person more susceptible to infections. The T cells, the fighter cells inside the body, the natural cells that we have, their count decreases when you are sleep deprived. It also increases inflammation inside the body and contributes to development of cancer. Inflammation has been found to be one of the most important reasons for various lifestyle diseases that we suffer from. Alzheimer's. As you age, this is one of the diseases that has started afflicting people in the world today. As a part of our metabolic activity, brain releases beta amyloid plaque, or those proteins inside the brain, that is what gets released. If it is not cleaned up, if that plaque starts accumulating, it starts killing the neurons inside the brain and it starts impacting the deep sleep regions of the brain. So it becomes a double whammy. Okay? Good night sleep found to help clean up beta amyloid plaque. Like inside the coronary artery, if the plaque gets accumulated, you get heart attack. Yes? Similarly, inside the brain also, if this beta amyloid plaque gets accumulated, that has been found to, you know, result in Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's especially erodes NREM sleep. And interestingly, it is during this NREM sleep that most of this plaque has been found to be removed. Lymphatic system, brain's expulsion system, most active during NREM stage. That is 10 to 20 times more active. You must have seen in your cities, most of the workers who clean the roads, they come onto the roads after 12. And then before 5. Yes? Because they are most active. There is no traffic. They can clean the things. That's exactly the stuff that brain also follows. So if you have the traffic continuously on the road, even after 12, like in some parts of Pune, Hyderabad or these metros, how are those roads? Do they get a chance to get it cleaned properly? No. That's exactly the system that even our brain and body follow. Getting too little sleep across adult lifespan will significantly raise your risk of developing Alzheimer's, because the beta amyloid plaque that is getting accumulated is not getting cleaned. And the more the plaque accumulates, the more are the neurons killed and the higher is the probability of you suffering from Alzheimer's. And in the next video clip, what I'm going to show you is how the brain's glymphatic system works and how it cleans up whatever beta amyloid plaque is accumulating inside the brain and what scientists have found just in the last few years, and how important it is as adults to have good amount of sleep so that the body and brain can do their work.
Bala, I have one question. Hair.
What is that?
This side.
Yeah.
So, in the beginning you said we need 5 to 6 cycles. That is, one cycle is 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So can we break it like 3 plus 2 or 4 plus 1, like if we get...
The same question was asked, maybe I will answer. So, usually we call them as monophasic sleep, if it is continuous. And then sometimes there is biphasic sleep, where you sleep in two parts. Or there is also multiphasic sleep. It depends on what works for you and what you get used to. And for all of them, simple way to check yourself is, do you wake up refreshed? Do you feel energetic all through the day? Or are you feeling tired? So if you take a break or you sleep for 6 hours at a stretch, maybe 10 to 4, you wake up for a few minutes for your meditation as you do here, and then you sleep for another couple of hours. What works for you is what you need to test. That's very important. So there are many ways in which people tend to sleep based on their lifestyle. For most of them it is monophasic sleep, for some it is biphasic, for some it is polyphasic sleep. Okay?
Sleep, it's something we spend about a third of our lives doing. But do any of us really understand what it's all about? 2,000 years ago, Galen, one of the most prominent medical researchers of the ancient world, proposed that while we're awake, our brain's motive force, its juice, would flow out to all the other parts of the body, animating them, but leaving the brain all dried up. And he thought that when we sleep, all this moisture that filled the rest of the body would come rushing back, rehydrating the brain and refreshing the mind. Now that sounds completely ridiculous to us now. But Galen was simply trying to explain something about sleep that we all deal with every day. See, we all know based on our own experience that when you sleep, it clears your mind. And when you don't sleep, it leaves your mind murky. But while we know a great deal more about sleep now than when Galen was around, we still haven't understood why it is that sleep, of all of our activities, has this incredible restorative function for the mind. So today, I want to tell you about some recent research that may shed new light on this question. We found that sleep may actually be a kind of elegant design solution to some of the brain's most basic needs, a unique way that the brain meets the high demands and the narrow margins that set it apart from all the other organs of the body. So almost all the biology that we observe can be thought of as a series of problems and their corresponding solutions. And the first problem that every organ must solve is a continuous supply of nutrients to fuel all the cells of the body. In the brain, that is especially critical. Its intense electrical activity uses up a quarter of the body's entire energy supply, even though the brain accounts for only about 2% of the body's mass. So the circulatory system solves the nutrient delivery problem by sending blood vessels to supply nutrients and oxygen to every corner of our body. You can actually see it in this video here. Here we're imaging blood vessels in the brain of a living mouse. The blood vessels form a complex network that fills the entire brain volume. They start at the surface of the brain, and then they dive down into the tissue itself. And as they spread out, they supply nutrients and oxygen to each and every cell in the brain. Now, just as every cell requires nutrients to fuel it, every cell also produces waste as a byproduct. And the clearance of that waste is the second basic problem that each organ has to solve. This diagram shows the body's lymphatic system, which has evolved to meet this need. It's a second parallel network of vessels that extends throughout the body. It takes up proteins and other waste from the spaces between the cells. It collects them and then dumps them into the blood so they can be disposed of. But if you look really closely at this diagram, you'll see something that doesn't make a lot of sense. So if we were to zoom into this guy's head, one of the things that you would see there is that there are no lymphatic vessels in the brain. But that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? I mean, the brain is this intensely active organ that produces a correspondingly large amount of waste that must be efficiently cleared. And yet, it lacks lymphatic vessels, which means that the approach that the rest of the body takes to clearing away its waste won't work in the brain. So how then does the brain solve its waste clearance problem? Well, that seemingly mundane question is where our group first jumped into the story. And what we found as we dove down into the brain, down among the neurons and the blood vessels, was that the brain's solution to the problem of waste clearance, it was really unexpected. It was ingenious, but it was also beautiful. Let me tell you about what we found. So the brain has this large pool of clean, clear fluid called cerebrospinal fluid. We call it the CSF. The CSF fills the space that surrounds the brain, and waste from inside the brain make their way out to the CSF, which gets dumped along with the waste into the blood. So in that way, it sounds a lot like the lymphatic system, doesn't it? But what's interesting is that the fluid and the waste from inside the brain, they don't just percolate their way randomly out to these pools of CSF. Instead, there is a specialized network of plumbing that organizes and facilitates this process. You can see that in these videos. Here, we're again imaging into the brain of living mice. The frame on your left shows what's happening at the brain's surface, and the frame on your right shows what's happening down below the surface of the brain within the tissue itself. We labeled the blood vessels in red, and the CSF that's surrounding the brain will be in green. Now, what was surprising to us was that the fluid on the outside of the brain, it didn't stay on the outside. Instead, the CSF was pumped back into and through the brain along the outsides of the blood vessels. And as it flushed down into the brain along the outsides of these vessels, it was actually helping to clear away, to clean the waste from the spaces between the brain cells. If you think about it, using the outsides of these blood vessels like this is a really clever design solution. Because the brain is enclosed in a rigid skull, and it's packed full of cells, so there is no extra space inside it for a whole second set of vessels like the lymphatic system. Yet the blood vessels, they extend from the surface of the brain down to reach every single cell in the brain, which means the fluid that's traveling along the outsides of these vessels can gain easy access to the entire brain's volume. So it's actually this really clever way to repurpose one set of vessels, the blood vessels, to take over and replace the function of a second set of vessels, the lymphatic vessels, to make it so you don't need them.
So as you saw there, this is the brain's ingenious way to remove the waste that gets generated. Okay, that's what we call as the lymphatic system he was talking about. And during the deep NREM sleep, actually the space between the neurons increases and the neurons shrink, so that this water can actually, or the cerebrospinal fluid can actually remove the waste. It's something like this. All through the day we have all these chairs, and at night magically all of them shrink to less than 60%. What happens? The spaces open up, and then I can get my water pipe and then simply clean them. And then in the morning, it comes back to its original size. That's the ingenious system that brain uses, and that liquid that it sprays is what we call as a cerebrospinal fluid. Because that waste must be removed. And some of the effects of limited sleep on body, you saw here, I'll just go through. Pain sensitivity increases. Immune system's capability decreases, metabolic function including the insulin resistance increases, memory and cognitive impairment, decreased alertness and focus, longer reaction time, which can actually be measured through some tests, mood swings and depression, increase in appetite, risk of obesity, increase of blood pressure, and increase of risk of heart attack. So anyone who thinks or who wants to play hero, as one of my peers always says, we always worship heroes. He just sleeps for 5 hours a day and then you see how active it is. He can't be. Both he and you are cheating yourself. He just came back from the flight and he just walked into the office and this meeting and he started speaking. He can't do that continuously. We tend to worship that heroes and not the people who do the work in a regular manner, and that heroism on a sustained basis, research is showing, is not going to work, because body cannot handle that amount of waste that is getting generated without getting cleaned up. And this also shows, as you increase the number of hours you are awake, you start becoming equal to as if a drunkard doing the driving. And in most anything more than 16 hours that you are awake and you don't get sleep and you still continue the driving, it's as if you are above the legal limit of alcohol that is allowed in most countries. The same impact alcohol would have, your sleeplessness also has on your driving and on your ability to think and focus. And this is the relationship that has been found in US. In terms of number of hours, as they decrease, the percentage of the obese individuals has been increasing. And interesting part of how the light impacts, as I was talking about this biological clock SCN, it activates and makes the brain produce melatonin. And that's the hormone that is the messenger of sleep, we call it as, which communicates to all the organs inside the body and brain and say that now it's time, it's night, it's time to sleep. Okay? And that melatonin concentration is at its highest during the midnight, and as the night progresses, its concentration comes down. If its concentration does not increase to a sufficient level, that sleep signal does not reach and we don't fall asleep. This is where light impacts. This is where the usage of mobile phones or the computers or any sort of screens late into the night becomes very, very problematic. Because the blue light that you see is the one that tells the brain it is not yet night to chill out. As a result, brain delays the release of melatonin. As a result, the rest of the body does not get that sleep signal. As a result, you find it very difficult to fall asleep as the night progresses. That's where insomnia and our inability to fall asleep faster comes. Check yourself, how many of you sleep after 11 p.m. and you cannot fall asleep before 11? Many, many years ago, one of my colleagues was saying, Bala, anything before 11 p.m. is evening and anything before 6 a.m. is night. That's how I count. That's what she was sharing. And for most of us, now that time to fall asleep has gradually moving more and more into the midnight and well past midnight. And one of the culprits is the usage of our technology, which tricks the brain, especially this blue light, which tricks the brain in saying it's not yet night, it's daytime, so you don't have to start the secretion of melatonin. Okay? And a couple of things which I shared yesterday also, if you still have to use your mobiles, install a couple of these apps, or you have those options in some of the Android phones and even in the iPhones, where after 6 p.m. you can set the counter, whether it is 6 p.m., 7 p.m. Suggest that you set it to 6 p.m. to at least 7 a.m. in the morning, where the screen moves from bright blue light to warmer colors of yellow, orange and red. So that has very less impact, and that's why as evening progresses, it's useful not to work in bright lights, bright white LED lights. It's useful to switch to either yellow or orange or red light in the evening so that your brain's melatonin generation is not disturbed. And what are some of the tips to sleep well? So let me walk you through those. Maintain regularity, extremely important. Sleep and wake up at the same time every day, weekend or weekday, where possible. Stay away from the screen at least for an hour before sleep. Reduce the amount of lighting in evenings. Because the more white light you are exposed to in the evening, the later brain starts secreting melatonin. Keep the room cool between 18 to 20 degrees Celsius and keep it radiation free. As I was giving the example of that brother yesterday, as soon as he removed the gadget, his sleep quality improved drastically. And how do these mobiles and the radiation from the mobiles impact? There's a friend of mine from US. She was diagnosed with high blood pressure. She met many doctors, many physicians, but they gave many medications, but the blood pressure was not coming down. So she came to India and wanted to meet some alternative medicine specialists. So one of the first things that specialist asked her when he was trying to take her history, he asked her, as a part of that, what is your mobile usage? And it was through the roof. That is, she was almost addicted to the mobile. And then gradually he helped her reduce the amount of time she was using mobile. And as she reduced the usage of mobile, her high BP also started coming down. So we still don't know the exact causal relationship of one-to-one, how this radiation, how the usage of mobile beyond a certain level impacts our body. But one thing is for sure, why it does, we are still understanding. But it does impact is a fact. Okay? Avoid alcohol, smoking and caffeine at least 4 hours prior. Very important. Because you saw in the small clip how adenosine, that chemical, keeps building up inside the brain. Okay? What caffeine does is it goes and stops from that adenosine to act. The adenosine receptors are blocked through this caffeine so that that is not removed. As a result, you get the false sense that you become alert. That's why this regular chai and coffee when you want to postpone the sleep. But that wears off within 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours. It is not that the adenosine is cleaned up. It is just that you are stopping it temporarily from acting. That's why once it wears off, the sleep urge increases even more. And if you take that before 4 hours, because that is typically the half-life of caffeine, it starts impacting your sleep, because sleep starts getting delayed and delayed. If you take this caffeine or alcohol after 7 or after 6, it delays the time you get to bed. And this is an interesting one for some people who might think that unless I get a peg, I won't be able to sleep. That's actually a misnomer, because it will not only decrease the quality of your sleep, but once the alcohol pressure wears off, you become worse off because you start waking up in the middle of the night. And don't stay in the bed awake. As we were discussing yesterday, more than 20-25 minutes, if you are not able to sleep, just get up and then start reading something. And do not watch Crime Patrol. Okay? Just because you are not falling asleep. I have seen one of my cousins do that, and then she brings in those panic attacks and then she loses the sleep. She is not able to fall asleep, so she sits on the television and she likes those thrillers and she watches Crime Patrol, and then the cycle becomes even worse. So don't use the screen. Read the books and then gradually you will fall asleep. And another very important thing about sleep, which I have experienced personally, is don't worry about sleep. Extremely, extremely, extremely important. As soon as it passes a few minutes, if you start worrying, even little bit of anxiety can impact your sleep. That's why don't watch your clock. Adha ghanta ho gaya, ek ghanta ho gaya, it's already 12, again I have to wake up at... Enough. Once you set your alarm, or if you wake up without alarm, fantastic, keep the clock down. Don't see it. And of course, meditation before sleeping helps a lot, because it calms you down. The more relaxed your mind and brain are, the easier it is to fall asleep. The more you think, the more active you are, the more stimulated you are, the longer it takes for you to fall asleep. And do not exercise too late in the evening. It's not good. Too much of stimulation, it will postpone your sleep. That's why I'm surprised in these gyms when so many of these people start working on those treadmills and doing all these exercises post 7 p.m. I don't know when they would like to sleep, but too late exercise, at least 4 hours prior to the sleep, do not do any strenuous exercise. Avoid large meals and beverages late at night. Definitely midnight biryani is definitely a no-no, because that impacts your brain and body, and definitely your sleep. Relax before bed. Do not overstimulate your brain. That's what I wrote here. Horror movies and thrillers, no-no at night. That's good. Taking a hot shower before the bed, because it reduces the temperature of the body and the possibility of you falling asleep becomes easier. Have a good sleeping environment. Very important. No sound. Not too many gadgets. Okay? And keep it clean and organized. Have right sunlight exposure during the day. Very important. Right sunlight exposure during the day and then experiencing that darkness or less exposure during the night is the best method for us to have good night's sleep. That's from my side. Okay, if you want to have that, my experience shows having curd rice at night coming from south, it helps. And use eye blinds when you sleep. Make it as dark as possible. Do not have any lights switched on in your bedroom. Try to make it as dark as possible. because darkness is a signal to the brain to start releasing melatonin. And then you fall asleep faster. And for shift workers, where possible, continue the same shift for at least 4 weeks. It's worst if you keep changing the shift every week. Maintain same sleep timings even during weekends so that the rhythm continues and the body and brain set to that clock. Work in yellow or orange light for 3 hours prior to close of the shift. Because this starts sending signal to your brain that yes, it is night. You are trying to trick the brain so that it starts generation of melatonin and the sleep message is received. And when you go home from your shift, usually very early in the morning, you can fall asleep. Have plenty of exposure to sunlight in the afternoons just before your shift starts so that your body gets adjusted. And make the room completely dark. Even when you go home, try to make it as dark as possible so that you can fall asleep sooner. Okay? That's what we want each one of you to experience. Okay? Thank you. So we have few more minutes for a few questions. Yes, yes. One brother is already ready. Very good.
Hello, Brother Bala. So I have few notes and few experiences that I have made. I would like to share and I would suggestion from you. First of all, yes, that point, not eating at night helps me a lot.
Which one?
Not eating at night helps me a lot.
Not eating and heavily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll just share this seminar experience that the first day I need to attend here 4:30 session, 4:30 a.m. session. First day I ate, but the second day I decided that I want to attend and I did not eat and I was successfully able to present here. And this is not just 2 days, but even I have been practicing this. So whenever I am not eating at the night, the another day I feel very refreshing, very refreshing. So the second point is that determining to wake up at specific time before the night, it also helps me a lot. So sometimes even I don't need alarm as well. So if I decide, if I'm sleeping at say 10 or 11 and if I decide that I need to wake up at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
I repeat it more and more that I need to wake up at 6. Without alarm, I have observed that so many times I have wake up at 6 without any alarm.
Perfect.
Yeah.
When you have an early morning flight, just a minute before alarm is when most of us wake up also.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah. Another experience is that early morning dreams wakes me up a lot. So sometimes I wake up just because of something is happening in dream, in such a condition which opens my eye.
Yeah.
And then I cannot sleep. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. And
That's the REM state we talked about.
One is specific to me and subjective that Sunday noon sleep is always wonderful for me. Sunday noon sleep, 2 to 4 or 5 sleep is always wonderful for me. So in that
enjoy.
Sleep, I personally feel that I have made the sleep for whole week. So,
fantastic.
Yeah,
good. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, thank
you. Yes.
You wanted to tell something about post-lunch.
Oh, yes.
Snap.
Yeah, so when you observe our circadian rhythm, there is definitely a lull post-lunch, between the 2 and 3 p.m. And that is not wrong. That is not wrong. If you can take a 20-minute nap, post lunch, 20 minutes only. Because my team members, they said, Bala, we know how to get into the sleep but not to get out. Then I said, you avoid. But if you have that control, 15 to 20 minutes, it's a very good refreshing afternoon nap. We call it as power nap. And some other time I will explain from where that power nap originated. Okay? But it is good. Because it refreshes you and then it keeps you awake for the rest of the half day that you have.
Okay, that was the question.
And yes, and personally I have been practicing it for more than 19 years. I have had very good understanding managers who allowed me, and whenever I shift the job, that is one of the conditions. I tell them, I take a nap of 20 minutes post lunch. Is that okay for you folks? So I switch off all the lights, I switch off the monitor, I turn my chair around, sit in the chair, close my eyes, and as soon as I enter into that N1 stage, you saw that, okay? I wake up. It's good enough. It's very refreshing. Yes.
Okay, that was my question actually. What do the studies and what are your viewpoints on the power nap? How does a 20 minute nap itself is so refreshing?
Did you try that?
Yes, I've done mine a couple of times.
Did it help?
Yes, definitely.
Fantastic. There it is. Yes. Done. Let's not get into the studies and other stuff. Okay. It helped me for 20 years. It helped you for a couple of times. If you can continue, hello, keep continuing.
Brother Bala, I'm here.
Yes.
Right. I had the same question, and on a related note, how do you differentiate taking a nap from proper good night's sleep? And also, when we take a nap, does our body also go through different stages as opposed to 7 or 8 hours sleep when you talk about REM sleep and NREM sleep and all?
No, see, what we are talking about is what the brain was going through. And accordingly, there are changes inside the body. Okay, the muscle tone that you saw in one of the pictures that I showed, how the eye movement comes down, how the muscle activity comes down, how during REM sleep the whole body is paralyzed. Sometimes that's why when you wake up from sleep, from your dream, you won't be able to move your arms and legs. And that also increases anxiety for some people. But brain will recover, body will recover. So there are many changes that are happening both in brain as well as body.
But then there are times when you take a power nap, or you just take a quick nap, and you wake, you wake up feeling energized. But at the same time, there are times when you wake up feeling worse than what you were feeling before.
Possible.
So why is that? I mean,
see, it depends on multiple factors. What is it that you were doing, thinking prior to that power nap? What was the timing that you gave? What is the interval? What is it that you were thinking? So if the day is more structured, then you get that benefit, and it depends on at that particular moment regularly into which stage you are entering into. That's why the 20-25 minute window is you just getting into the sleep, you dipped into that N2 stage, you feel relaxed when you wake up. If you are not yet into that stage, it is still taking some time, for whatever reason, you feel that grogginess.
Hello.
Perfect, thank you.
Hello. मैं हिंदी में ही थोड़ा सवाल पूछूं। ऐसा है, ये ग्रेविटेशनल फोर्स होता है गुरुत्वाकर्षण, इसका हमारी बॉडी के ऊपर और नींद के ऊपर भी असर होना चाहिए, ये है, तो इसके बारे में अगर आपको नॉलेज है तो बताएं।
ग्रेविटेशन के बारे में मुझे पता नहीं है, लेकिन जो अर्थ का साइकिल है, जैसे स्पेस में जाते हैं तो उनका, जैसे हमारा दिन और रात 24 घंटे का होता है, दिन रात और दिन ये 24 घंटे का है। जब स्पेस में जाते हैं तो उनका दिन और रात एवरी 90 मिनट्स इट कीप्स चेंजिंग, सो इट बिकम्स डिफिकल्ट फॉर देम टू स्लीप. आवर ह्यूमन बॉडी इज अट्यून्ड टू द एनवायरमेंट आउटसाइड.
हेलो.
तो जो ग्रेविटेशन का इम्पैक्ट क्या है वो मुझे पता नहीं है.
जहां तक मुझे पता है, मैं थोड़ा सा शेयर करना चाह रहा हूं. ऐसा है कि दिन के 12 बजे हमारे बॉडी पर जो ग्रेविटेशन फोर्स है ना, अर्थ हमें नीचे खींचेगी, सन ऊपर खींचेगा, तो मिनिमाइज होगा, उस वक्त वर्किंग आवर्स होने चाहिए. और जो रात का समय है, रात के 12 बजे, तो सन भी डाउन में है और अर्थ भी डाउन में है, दोनों में नीचे खींच रहे हैं, हमारे ग्रेविटी फोर्स का असर ज्यादा होगा, तो वो स्लीपिंग आवर्स बताए गए हैं. तो इससे 3 घंटा पहले 9 बजे से लेके और सुबह 3 बजे तक, यही आइडियल आवर्स है स्लीपिंग के. और ब्रह्म मुहूर्त का इसी से कनेक्शन है. कहते हैं ना, ब्रह्म मुहूर्त में सोना नहीं चाहिए, जागना चाहिए. इसके बारे में अगर और डिटेल आपके पास है तो बताने कष्ट करें.
थैंक यू भाई साहब. ओके, डन.
अगला जस्ट लास्ट क्वेश्चन. आई जस्ट नीड अ सॉल्यूशन फ्रॉम यू. सी, आई गेट लॉट ऑफ ड्रीम्स एंड दैट डिस्टर्ब माय स्लीप. एंड व्हाट हैपेंस, द ड्रीम्स दैट आई गेट मोस्टली आर ऑन द थिंग्स विच आई थिंक लिस्ट रादर.
ओके,
व्हाट आर द थॉट्स दैट आई गेट more often before going to bed, I never get the dreams about that.
Okay. So, could because it's something specific to you, we'll discuss in the break. Yes. Is there any quality of sleep will definitely improve with meditation. But can meditation reduce the amount of sleep? I don't know. It may or may not. It again depends on the individual. But what's very important is meditation definitely improves the quality of your sleep. Can, by sleeping, by meditating for 1 hour, can you reduce 1 hour of your sleep? Few minutes here and there, you might want to try it. But unless you try, we don't know.
Actually, I'm a working woman, so I have to take care of many responsibilities. I'll be able to sleep only for 5 hours. So is there any other alternative I can take care of my sleep and health?
I am sorry. If you hear, this is one researcher whom you want to read about. His name is Matthew Walker. Matthew Walker. And the good content that I have taken is from his book called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. And he is pretty clear. This sleep is non-negotiable. So you need to adjust your lifestyle such that you start getting a minimum of 6 to 7 hours of sleep. Because anything less than 6, there is no other artificial way in getting more sleep in general and just sleeping only for 5 hours. Sleeping pills, alcohol, any artificial stuff that you try to take, they do not improve the quality of sleep. So it is always, always, always helpful to start with non-pharmacological interventions to improve the quantity and quality of your sleep. When that doesn't work, you actually meet a sleep researcher or a sleep doctor and then make a decision. And that too for a limited period of time. Because these sleeping pills, they do not improve the quality. So be very careful.
You were suggesting to switch off white lights during the evening.
Yes.
So in case someone has to study for at least 2 or 3 hours during the night, what do you suggest?
Use a different form of light which focuses only on your book and that is visible.
Okay.
And if you are interested in purchasing some of those, I can share those.
Okay. It would be great.
But not have the complete bright white light.
Okay.
And that if once in a while, that is fine. But every single night, you have to figure out an alternative. Okay? Is it fine? So I think it's lunchtime now. We will come. You can meet me after the session. Okay. So at 4:30, if you remember, or at 4:15, we requested you to come and then say that we are going to go out for picnic. But the complete land is wet because of the fog, as you have seen. So we will have our session here inside the hall instead of outside. Weather gods don't want us to go out for whatever reason, so I'm sorry. We will come back and then have our session here. Okay, just sit back. We will need just 2 more minutes. We'll sing a nice lullaby and then we will go for lunch. Okay, just sit back. Sit back, close your eyes, and even if you fall asleep, it's okay. Thank you.